Hi, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to season two of Toy Heart, a podcast about bluegrass. I'm really looking forward to you hearing what we have in store for you for this season. You're going to hear from Allison Krauss and Larry Sparks and Mike Compton and Lori Lewis and Tim O'Brien and so much more. Listen, if you're not already subscribed to our podcast, do me a favor, please do so. If you have someone in your life who likes bluegrass, if you have someone in your life who got into the music through Billy Strings or Molly Tuttle and wants to know more about the music, please pass the podcast on to them. It is so good to be back for season two of Toy Heart. We'll see you soon. Later on.
Season two of Toy Heart with Tom Power is out now. Subscribe and listen where you get podcasts or thebluegrasssituation.com.
Welcome to You Wanted a Hit, a podcast in which we discuss unlikely, perplexing, and positively bizarre songs that swept the nation and often the world. Hit songs that, looking back, make us think, how did this get played on the radio? Do people actually like this? Do we like this? Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm your co-host, Michael Smith, and I'll be discussing one song per episode with my co-host and fellow music fanatic, pop culture enthusiast Theo Bidler. Each episode, we'll take turns exploring the song, while the other host has no idea what song will be the focus until we hit play.
Well, we're back. You wanted a hit. We've had an exciting couple of weeks where we got a little sidetracked.
It's spring break, you know?
Hey, also, James Madison University in NCAA tournament. We were lucky to attend that game, the first round game, together. It's so great. Fun in Brooklyn. Go Dukes. Excited for what's to come.
Shall we crack a beer in their honor?
I think Let's we should. It. Go Dukes. No other way to toast your the state university that you attended.
This is an episode that people been asking for.
Oh yeah,
you've been asking for.
Oh, I have.
We've been teasing it. We've mentioned it a couple times already,
so it's come up.
You probably know what I'm talking about. But if you don't, let me choose one of the two songs.
Whoa. We have another double episode?
We're finally doing it.
Oh. Whoop.
Whoop. There it is.
And whoop. There it is.
And whoop.
Woot. Sorry. There woot. There it is. Two different songs. Tag team is back again. I'm excited for this.
We gotta get to it.
So this is Whoomp.
That was Whoomp. There
Whoomp,
it is.
There it is.
That was Whoomp.
Bye. That was Whoomp.
There's a Woot.
But there is a Woot. Which we learned only from looking at the charts from other episodes.
Yes, I believe the first time we referenced this was the Proclaimers episode, because we will talk about them at some point on this episode, because they do appear on the chart.
Great. And it was the second time that they were on the chart with
that
song.
That's correct. Yeah.
So early, what, 92?
93 on the charts.
93, yep. Okay.
But these songs, at least one of them, was written in 92. So we'll talk about 92 as well. We are talking about Whoomp. There it is. Whoomp, W-H-O-O-M-P. And then in parentheses, There It Is by the group Tag Team. And we'll also talk about Woot. There It Is. No parentheses. And Woot is spelled W-H-O-O-T by the group 95 South.
Okay. And then what was the song that we covered not too long ago that had the beat? How Bizarre. Mm-hmm. How Bizarre samples Whoomp. There it is, Whoomp. I believe, the beat.
That is correct. Actually, I didn't even cover that in this episode. There's more to cover. So let's jump right in. We will begin talking about, and honestly, we will mainly talk about Tag Team tonight, because after doing thorough research, Tag Team is arguably the bigger song, the more recognizable song I don't know that we're going to come up and figure out by the end of this episode which one we heard first, but I would imagine it was Boom, There It Is, especially because we lived in the North. And it seems like, you know, we'll talk about it, but these songs kind of come out of the South. And it seems like a lot of people that grew up in the South definitely might have heard Whoop, There It Is first, maybe Whoomp. But nationwide, I think Whoomp was the bigger hit overall. There's also more information on Tag Team. So let's jump in.
Is that a way to learn about people? Like, are you a Whoomper or a Wooter?
I think it's a great question to start asking. Yeah. People always talk about how they want to talk about more than, like, what do you do for a living? Where are you from? So this is a great topic starter. So Tag Team is made up of Cecil Glenn, who we will call DC. DC the Brain Supreme is the full name.
Great
he goes
rapper
by.
Name. Lovely.
And we have Steve Gibson, who goes by Steve Rowland, R-O-L-L-N.
Oh.
Yeah. They both grew up in Denver, Colorado.
Oh.
DC's parents were his role models.
Not a big hip hop hub, Denver.
Mm-mm. We will lightly talk about that. DC's okay. parents were his role models. His dad, who's also named Cecil, he was the director of minority education programs and ethnic studies programs at the University of Colorado, Denver. And his mom was a supervisor in the local juvenile court.
Serious chops.
DC said in one interview, "When you look back at it, I had it good. I can't complain about shit." DC and Steve met at Manuel High School, specifically in Mrs. Langley's social sciences class in 1982.
Mrs. Langley, legend.
Yeah. I looked at other notable alums and from Manuel High School. There were two former mayors of Denver.
Oh.
But more notably for us, fellow podcaster and one of my favorites from NPR, Scott Horsley,
a
former alum of Manuel High School.
Ah,
he's kind of legendary in the podcast scene.
Oh, so. Yeah, absolutely.
Steve was into music from an early age. His dad had a...
Steve Horsley?
Scott Horsley. Probably, Scott, I think he's a music fan
yeah,
as well.
That's right. That's but right. That's
Steve
right.
Rowland was into music at an early age. His dad had a great collection of LPs, and he would mix songs with his parents' tape recorders. He played drums in the school jazz band and had some side groups before Tag Team locally as well. Steve was the senior class president and apparently prided himself on his wardrobe and style back in the day. Mm. DC was a singer in the Bolt Vibrations Chorus, which was the chorus group at the school, and he also played football for the school.
Cool name for a chorus. Also, chorus and football, I commend him. Two different scenes, and that's a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. According to the mayor, Michael Hancock, who went to school with them, he said they were the big men on campus. Steve was the man. Cecil was just the coolest dude.
All right.
So the two started performing together while in high school. It sounds like Steve had a group called Tag Team before DC came along, which they may have disbanded or might have just been one other guy. But eventually, him and DC would join up and they would become Tag Team. But it seemed like the name had been around for quite a while. They would perform at the 6th Street Mall and collected tips in a plastic cup, apparently.
Of course.
DC said it was the stone age of hip-hop. It was simple and fun back then. Make a beat, write the lyrics, name the song, make it sound good. Not necessarily
so like
in that 80, order.
83?
Yeah, 82, 83.
Okay.
They made their first recording at Free Reel and Studios in Denver and performed at the city's Juneteenth celebration for the first time in 1983. So there you go.
Cool.
I read in one article from 5280, I guess, Denver's Mile High magazine, that they wrapped in a, this is a quote from them, they wrapped in a parking lot off Holly Square Shopping Center and in hotel lobbies. There wasn't much future for hip hop in Denver, though, and rap wasn't getting regular airtime on the radio. Everything that made Denver a really generally safe place for young African-American males made it a terrible incubator for hip hop. So I think it's a funny line from an old article, but probably some truth to it as well.
Yeah.
So the pair moved down to Atlanta, Georgia.
Wait, they moved there for music?
For hip-hop.
Okay. Cool. I kind of always assumed that this song was like a Southern rap.
Definitely.
Part of the Southern rap story.
Yeah. Steve moved down there first. He was studying at the Art Institute of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And DC started studying in Southern California, but decided to join Steve in Atlanta once he heard about the music scene there and what everyone was getting into. They were inspired by Southern hip hop, specifically the Southern bass sound, or more commonly called the Miami bass sound, that was popular in the 1980s and early 90s. Songs like Get Loose by Two Live Crew and Tootsie Roll by 69 Boys.
Definitely see the connection there.
Yeah. I found a listing of, or list detailing the top 10 songs in Miami bass according to this random website. They named those two songs as good examples. They also named one by 10 Cans or 10 K-A-N-S that I think you should hear because it's a fun little ditty. I'll send it your way.
Okay. So here's some Miami bass. Yep. Ah.
You Need Dick in Your Life is the name of the song. It's kind of a fun song.
Yep.
I mean, that's a funny song. Are you familiar with that song?
I mean, we've all been there. So I feel like it's characterized by very percussive beats, a lot of like snares and bells, and then like deep bass and a lot of hi-hats. It's like almost like a precursor to trap.
Yeah. And a lot of the guys that talk about it do talk about trap. I'll send you the Two Live Crew song just so you can get inspired. I feel like Two Live Crew with probably one of the early editions of that.
I feel like they're the biggest one. They had multiple hits, not just like one hit here and there. Like they were an institution.
Yeah, I think they kind of started this movement. They are also known. I don't know a ton about them, but I do know that I believe they are one of the main, if not the main, acts in the early 90s that the government tried to ban, or when they tried to crack down on explicit
Tipper Gore was not a fan of Two Live Crew,
but they pushed back, they held strong, mm-hmm. probably thanks to their efforts kind of changed hip-hop and changed music for the long run.
This is great. So good.
Great song.
It was like them and Slayer, right? Who is the metal band that was also in hot water at the time? I think it was Slayer.
That sounds about right. I can see that. Tag Team, though, they released their first single in 1990 called Strictly Political.
How political is it?
Talks about voting.
22 million black victims of Americanism are waking up. And they're gaining a new political consciousness.
That sample at the beginning is Malcolm X, right?
Yeah. You come here to say what you like. I'm going to tell you the truth whether you like it or not. Come on.
The time has not come. We must pick up. Oh, this beat is cool.
It's cool, yeah.
It's really interesting. We struggle for this privilege so long since our ancestors were contained by Shaq. Not what I expected from our Whoop There It Is guys.
Well, yeah, it's not Miami bass style, which we will talk about, and we'll feed into a bit of the controversy between these two songs.
This is cool. This is really good.
Very cool. And frustratingly enough, I couldn't find a lot of other early recordings before they come out with Whoop. There might not have been much that they actually recorded.
It's funny because one of the comments says, has a very New York City, East Coast feel versus their more well-known Southern rap style.
It does.
I can see that. Yeah.
It also kind of reminds me of Killer Mike.
Oh, yeah. I could see that, too.
Which would be Atlanta. Mm-hmm. You know, has that kind of the beat and the way they rhyme. It was in these early years that DC was working as the main DJ at Atlanta Staple, a notorious strip club, Magic City.
Oh, I'm aware of Magic City.
It is. How aware of you are you? Have you been to Magic City?
I mean, I feel like if you listen to any hip hop from the last 30 years, you know what Magic City is.
Yeah. If you listen to hip hop or if you follow a lot of NBA Twitter, Magic City.
I've only been to one strip club in Atlanta, and it was with you. And
That's true.
Was the Claremont Lounge, which is, I believe, what Yelp described as where you go to watch your third grade teacher strip.
I've always heard it's called where strippers go to die. Either way, very different than Magic City, from what I hear.
Okay.
But it is thanks to Magic City that we have the song today, because according to the story, DC said, Three strippers, Cinnamon, Chocolate, and Dark and Lovely,
excellent,
had just gotten back from Miami, and they told him about a phrase that everyone was using down there, and that phrase was, whoop, there it is. I'll just say it's a bit controversial because people talk about this phrase being used in Atlanta strip clubs a lot, but also kind of all up the southern East Coast. But that is a big point of contention, that this was a phrase that was being used a lot at that time.
They weren't being used a lot in libraries.
Unless, I mean, that's a really interesting business idea, mixing the two. sure. So DC immediately had the idea for a song, and he went to Steve with it, and he said, we need to do a song around Whoop, There It Is. And Steve was immediately on board, but asked, how do you spell it? Which is a great question, because there's still a lot of
I don't think if I just heard the version that I know, which is the one you played, the Whoop, There It Is, I don't think it just from hearing the song that I'd be able to just spell it correctly.
I always thought it was Whoop, no M.
I think I just knew it was Whoop because I've seen that on like jukeboxes and on jock jams and shit since I was a kid.
Sure. But I don't think Woot.
No, I don't think Woot. I don't hear Woot.
So DC told Steve that it had to be Miami bass sounding. And at the time, that wasn't the music they were doing. That wasn't what Steve was doing. Steve made the beats. But DC convinced him that he could do it. And he said, make a few beats, do the bass your way. He did it. He came back with five different beats. And one in particular really stuck out.
Ding,
and
ding,
that one ding. Sampled... Well, it sampled the 1980s dance track from Italian group Kano.
Oh.
The song called I'm Ready.
Let's hear it. It's a nice disco track.
Yeah. But you can hear a bit of it there, for sure. So other than it being a song that originated from strip clubs, there really isn't much more to it than that. Tag Team has said that the song is, quote, anything that one agrees with on a positive level.
Okay.
So it's just a song about positivity and having fun, partying.
Cracking a beer. One of the phrases, there it is.
Yeah, whoop, there it is.
Yeah.
One of the phrases that's often, or that's repeated often in the song is shakalaka.
Uh-huh.
And this was a thing that Steve and another buddy would say to each other when they passed in the halls back in high school.
Shakalaka?
Shakalaka.
Great.
Fun little throwback to the Denver days.
Yeah.
Apparently, DC played the song at Magic City the night that it was mixed, and he said it received the biggest crowd response that he'd ever seen.
Oh, so he was DJing there?
He was DJing at Magic City, yeah. He was the main DJ.
Okay.
From their own website, quote, as soon as he lugged his records through the club's back door and got set up, he popped the cassette in, and at 8:08 on a Thursday evening in August 1992, Tag Team's Whoop, There It Is, the song was born. As soon as the beat dropped, everyone in the club could feel something different was happening, something extraordinary. Heads started bobbing a little harder. Booties began shaking with a little more jiggle. The song's first verse, lyrics Tag Team back again, set the party off. And as DC watched the club goers react to the song, he knew he had something special. By the song's end, people were mobbing his booth asking, what the hell was that? DC knew they had a hit.
Of course, it was 8:08 p.m.
I know. Definitely a bit of revisionist history there.
But that's great.
But also there's a little controversy on when the song was written, whether it was August 1992 or October 1992. That doesn't necessarily matter, but we'll get into it in a second here. It was also probably likely that they played the song early, whether August or October. It sounds like they played it. It got good reception, but then they stopped playing it for a while. People started asking for it, and he replayed it in January 93, possibly with a different mix on the song. And that's when things really started popping off.
Were they just trying to build demand?
I don't know if it was that, or again, well, as we get into talk about 95 South, these timelines really start to matter. So believe there's a little bit revisionist history in the way that these stories have been told over the years.
I do respect the song is, everyone loves it. They want to hear it. Don't play it next week.
I mean, yeah, true.
Play it in 2 weeks,
smart
or three
move,
weeks.
Smart move.
Keep them coming. Especially them are like, you can't look that song up. You can't find it anywhere. unless you brought in a bootleg rig, you can't listen to it at home. You can only go to Magic City to hear the song.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's kind of, you know, the next part of the story here. They started getting a little bit of label attention in January of 93. There's one story that a record exec was at the club, loved the song, asked for a copy. He sent it to New York, and that label didn't know if it would sell. They really weren't sure about the Miami-based scene, so that kind of faltered out. So because of that, DC borrowed $2,500 from his parents and pressed 800 records, which he quickly sold through via word of mouth around Atlanta.
All right.
And a funny little side story here. DC's dad, also named Cecil, didn't know anything about the song when he lent DC the money. Years later, he recounted when he first heard about the song. Keep in mind, his dad is a huge music fan, and he plays music himself. So he says he came out of church one Sunday morning when someone told him they had just heard his son's song on the radio. Cecil said, "That's great," and asked the man at church the name of his son's song, thinking it would be, quote, you know, something like Strangers in the Night, naming one of his favorite Sinatra tunes. And then he says, the article quotes him saying, the guy was like, "It's called Womp, there it is." And the article says, Cecil has a shit-eating grin on his face now, imitating the man who's delivered the punchline. Cecil puts his hands on his face to feign disbelief and leans back in his chair, and everyone laughs. I kind of love that. There's a lot of comments about his dad being like, because I think DC was like really smart, was going to college for something completely different. So his dad's like, why the hell were you going to rap? Like, what are you doing? It all worked out, obviously.
Oh, like, but how many of us or our friends or favorite musicians where their parents are like, you're on track to do something great. What are you doing messing around with these bands?
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
So apparently it was DC's friend, Lisa McCall, who worked at Mercury Records, who told him...
That name is familiar. Has she come up before on this? On our show?
Your memory is better than mine, so I will rely on you or our listeners to comment.
She sounds like someone in the You Wanted a Hit cinematic universe.
She might be. So she told him to get in touch with a guy named Al Bell. And Al Bell started as a radio DJ out of Little Rock, Arkansas, and had a successful career running Stax Record in Memphis, working with folks like the Staple Sisters, Isaac Hayes, The Emotion, The Dramatics, and others.
No big deal. This one of the greatest labels of all
time. He would also go on to run Motown for a while as it got itself ready to sell to MCA.
Were you allowed to work at those? That's like it's like playing for the Knicks and the Lakers.
Pretty impressive. Well, then he went on to form his own label called Bellmark, which is what he signed Tag Team to. On the website, the band's website and Tag Team's website, they tell the story of how they first got in touch with Al. DC explained to Mr. Bell that he was a top DJ in Atlanta and he had a hit record that had been tested for success. He implored Al to take the record seriously because as a DJ, he knew these types of records didn't come around often. After DC finished his pitch, Al Bell said, "Okay, let's do it. Let's agree to agree." And DC replied, "But you haven't heard the record." DC remembers the words to this day. Bell replied, "Brother, I don't have to hear the record. I hear it in your spirit."
Wow.
I don't know if that's true.
That's pretty awesome. That's some real A&R. That's some real A&R shit.
Kind of love it. Fun side fact, Bell also released Prince's hit single, The Most Beautiful Girl in the World, after Prince's label Warner Brothers turned him down. That's interesting. So the song officially came out in 1993, and it caught on like wildfire, gaining its peak position on the charts just a few weeks later in mid-July. And we will talk about the charts shortly, but before, we have another song we need to talk about, because as we talked, there is Whoop, There It Is by Tag Team, which came out in May 1993, but there's another song called Whoop, There It Is, that came out months prior in February 1993.
By 95 South.
95 South.
I was on 95 South on Friday.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Well, yes, 95 South, this group hails out of Jacksonville, Florida, and 95 South runs right through Jacksonville, as well as many other cities, I'm sure. But, you know, they wrote that name, which I think it's kind of cool. To go over the timeline so we're all aware, Whoop, There It Is by Tag Team was recorded in August or October of 1992, while Whoop, There It Is was recorded in November 1992. So a month later, but was released in February 93, where Whoomp, There It Is was released in May 1993.
Okay. Following.
So, you know, let that be that. 95 South out of Jacksonville was made up of Artis A.B. Bartley, Carlos Daddy Black Spencer, and J. Ski McGowan.
Wait, is Ski the...
I couldn't find much about them. I'm going to be honest with you.
Nickname? Okay.
The nickname is Ski. Okay. So
just keeping everybody straight. There's a lot of characters here.
Yeah, it's true. Couldn't find out a lot about the early days of A.B. and Ski, but I do know that Carlos Daddy Black was working as a barber, more so hairstylist from an early age. He went to school for it, and he jokes that he realized that all the women were on the hairstyle and cosmetology side of the building, not the barber side of the building. So he followed them and became a stylist instead.
Cool.
I think it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
It sounds like his brother, Mike Phillips, who goes by Mike, was in a group called the Chill Deal Boys.
Okay.
Prior to 95 South being a thing. So, you know, music was definitely a part of that. Mike will end up joining 95 South later down the road. He was also a part of the 69 Boys, who we referenced earlier.
Tootsie Roll.
And he's a part of 69 Boys with Jay Ski.
Okay.
So it sounds like there's a lot of these guys here. They have this, like, crew.
The 69 Boys are involved in this. They had a couple of hits. Not just Tootsie Roll, but they had a couple other ones.
They did.
Another, like, Jock Jams kind of...
They're all very similar.
I think they had, like, a... Not Space Jam, but...
Well, let's talk about that, because this song, Woot, There It Is, is produced and written by CC Lemonhead and Jay Ski being in the band. I think they went by the name The Bass Mechanics for a little bit, for that two, like, producing duo.
That's a great name.
That is a good name. Especially for
that
this kind
so
of music.
That is so good. Yeah, I love that.
So this duo wrote and produced Tootsie Roll. They also did some tracks for Dis and Dat. And they're both members of Quad City DJs.
Oh.
And we know them from the Space Jam theme song.
Space Jam.
As well as Come on Ride It, that train.
Yes.
So that's the thing. All these guys are very intermixed.
It's all similar sound. It's all that Miami-based stuff.
Yeah.
Hmm. So that fun fact. We played the Space Jam theme song by Quad City DJs at my wedding.
That's right.
Which you were in. So you were introduced as part of the wedding party to that song.
Wow. You know, we were ahead of the game here for
full circle
our podcast. Yeah.
Pre-pod days.
So Jay Ski told the LA Times at the time of the song's release that, quote, "I got the idea for the single from the clubs in Atlanta. I heard people saying, whoop, there it is. And I thought that's a good idea for a single."
Hmm.
So Tag Team is saying that these strippers that visited Miami heard the phrase down there. And then maybe they started saying it in Atlanta before Jay Ski and 95 South got the idea. Maybe not.
Sounds like these dancers should be getting royalties from somebody.
Maybe so. All in all, I feel like this phrase was being said a lot at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it, you know, when we were on the Proclaimers episode, when we first figured this all out, we were like, how in the world is it possible that it's a coincidence that two groups came up with the same idea at the same time? And I really do think that it is possible that this is a coincidence. But we'll get into it a little more.
Hmm.
Before we do, we'll talk a little bit more about 95 South. They also sample a track. They sampled Africa, Bambaataa, and Soul Sonic Force, Looking for the Perfect Beat.
Yep. Great song by a dubious character.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Africa Bambaataa is...
I don't know.
Shame, because such a pivotal person in hip-hop. But yeah, he's like a pedophile. He's like partially credited with joining the worlds of punk and new wave and hip-hop.
Wow.
Because he was spinning in clubs in New York that were like all the punks were at, but he was playing hip hop and, you know, Beastie Boys, Run DMC, all these folks like, oh yeah, we're combining these worlds. Like a lot of it was after Mabata.
Huh, that's pretty cool. Okay. They also sample Williston Dodgers, 122 BPM. wasn't familiar. I think this guy might just be a producer. This is, I like this beat. This beat's dope.
Yeah, this is cool.
I don't know much about him. I want to look into him. I assume he was just kind of like a...
Yeah, I'm not familiar. I'm sure I've heard this, but...
I think he's just like a hip-hop producer, like, would just make a track.
I love it. This record has like the actual like label sticker on the video. It's just...
Yeah.
Side A is this song four times in four different BPMs. 130, 114, 122, 108.
This is what he did. I think this is what he did. Like...
That's awesome.
Yeah, I got some
DJs. There's doesn't matter what you're playing, you can transition into the song. That's
yeah.
great.
I couldn't do all the deep dive and all these random people, so. But maybe I do need to come back to him.
Yeah, it's a cool track.
95 South was signed to Ichiban Records, which was out of Atlanta. I did not find a lot of information about them. I do know it was started by John Abbey, who was a British-born record producer and later label owner and manager. It looks like they released a...
Who was in Atlanta?
Yeah, but I'm not... I think he moved to Atlanta at one point, clearly.
Hmm. He knew things were happening there.
Yeah. They released a lot of soul and blues records, as well as a lot of hip-hop. There, again, there's not much information, but if you look at the Wikipedia, names associated with the label were Lil Jon, Cool Moe Deep, Sir Mix-a-Lot, and others.
Yeah.
But it wasn't clear, like... when in their mm-hmm. worlds that they worked with Ichiban. I think Cool Moe Deep
like featured artists or
it does
something.
Look like they released a Cool Moe Deep song later in his career. But like Baby Got Back would have been a year before this song. And I don't think that they had any connection with that. Maybe though. But if I looked at Lil Jon, Sir Mix-a-Lot, they don't list Ichiban on their websites. So not sure. Anyway. It sounds like
Baby Got Back kind of has like a little Miami bass thing,
definitely, yeah,
going on, even though it's from Seattle. And actually, I was thinking when we were listening to these beats, it reminded me of Brass Monkey by Beastie Boys. I feel like that's got a big Miami bass thing going on,
definitely. It's funny because we'll get into it a little bit later. But 95 South felt like their song was a little more dirtier. And which is why they feel like they didn't get as much success as Tag Team did. But people point to Sir Mix-a-Lot being like, that song came out a year before, and that got a lot of radio play. So you can't blame radio for not wanting to say booty.
Yeah, they were playing some Two Live Crew stuff too.
Yeah. So it sounds like Ichiban approached 95 South prior to the release of this song, because Carlos talks about how Ichiban helped get the song mixed, which plays into some conspiracy theories, which we'll get into. So
we're going to turn to Joe Rogan.
Yeah. Oh, God. I don't know about that. So anyway, about ivermectin. When we first talked about this song on the Proclaimers or whatever episode it first came up on, I remember we did a quick search and we found that there was apparently no bad blood between these two groups.
Well, it happened in real time in the episode.
Yeah.
We were looking at a chart and you said, wait, these are two different songs. And then we went down the rabbit hole for a minute.
Yeah, exactly. When we did that, we found that it was complete coincidence and there was no bad blood between the two labels, at least. Turns out that's not completely true.
There's a little bit of bad blood.
Well, I think that the labels probably quelched this a little bit. To me, and we'll get into this a little bit more, but I do kind of feel like this might be a situation where rising tides lift all ships.
Yeah.
In a way, like, both of these songs became popular, maybe because the other one got popular and people heard, like, people bought one thinking it was the other, like, not saying that these songs couldn't have existed on their own.
I mean, that was the whole, we've talked about this a couple times, but that was the whole point of cover songs back in the day.
Yeah,
like,
true.
You're literally trying to cover a hit that's already out with another version.
Yeah.
And have two different artists so that when people go to the store, they see it and they buy it. Doesn't matter which artist it is. And radio, they're like, well, we'll play whatever we have on hand. If it's that song, it's that song. It doesn't matter who the artist is.
Yeah. And I don't, that didn't happen here on purpose.
No, but it's an example of.
Yeah.
One might actually be more successful because the other one exists.
And one might be successful solely because the other one exists. And mm-hmm. I can't necessarily say who wins out here. We can look at record sales and all that.
Competition is healthy, even if you're making the exact same product.
Yeah. The labels, said it was mere coincidence. Like I said, and a lot of people have said this, the phrase whoomp or woot or woot or whatever, there it is, at the time was a phrase people were using in strip clubs and dance clubs mm-hmm. in general. In the LA Times article that I mentioned earlier, Jay Ski from 95 South said, quote, "In February, I took the single," this would have been February 93, "I took the single to Cecil Glenn of Tag Team, who was a DJ at a club in Atlanta. Maybe he heard our record and said, I can do one like that too. We know plenty of cases where people have gone in to buy our record and mm-hmm. wound up buying their record instead." Now, Steve from Tag Team in a more recent interview said, "We didn't know nothing about that, real talk." He then went on to describe the timeline that we talked about. Some of the, where it gets a little messy and weird is that I guess these songs were both mixed by the same studio. So, or remixed at least, because that's why I think that January remix of Tag Team is important.
Mm.
So the way it goes down is that where 95 South had their record mixed was mm-hmm. at the studio in Atlanta. And it was early days of Pro Tools, and this studio was one of the first studios to have Pro Tools. And so 95 South feels that like they went, got the album mixed. When they got the CD back, they thought they were getting the master like they always had. And they didn't realize that the song and the files still live on the computer in the data there.
Right.
And so they're thinking that maybe Tag Team heard that and then made their album. Whereas Tag Team says they got the song remixed at that studio. And even engineers at the studio at the time said, "Hey, we don't want you thinking that we helped steal a song, but there's another group that's making the song as well."
Mm.
And so both competing stories.
Interesting.
Kind of, who knows where
somebody in that mix knows what actually happened.
Yeah, and again, maybe nothing happened. Like, might have been pure coincidence. Which,
that might be the story. But
especially if
there's a common person in the story here.
Potentially. Yeah. I don't know if it was mixed by the same engineers. Mm-hmm. That's what Tag Team's saying. But mm-hmm. Tag Team doesn't care because they wrote it months before, mm-hmm. apparently. So,
or some dancers wrote it and told them about it.
True.
Right.
So it's hard to parse the truth here. Either way, Carlos from 95 South feels that Tag Team had the better marketing and better placements in stores, mm-hmm. which led them to having better success at the end of the day.
Because their label it was just bigger.
Bigger, better, different. I mean, who knows? So there was a lawsuit between these two, and there's not a lot of information about it.
I would say that constitutes as bad blood.
Well, right. Yeah. So we our initial research, this is why we do deep dives, so we can figure out the truth for y'all.
Or try to.
There was a lawsuit. There's not much information. All that's said about it is that it was settled out of court. I have to assume that 95 South was the ones who sued Tag Team simply because they say it a lot and Tag Team doesn't really care. I mean, I think also partially Tag Team has just been way more successful. So, I don't think that they care to be like, well, maybe 95 South stole from us. They're not making that claim. Mm-hmm. They're really going with the fact that it was coincidence.
It's usually the party that isn't making as much money that brings the lawsuit.
Yeah. Yeah. So in the summer of 93, when both of these songs were popping, Arsenio Hall came in the picture to end the battle between which one.
Oh, he's good at this because he's the one that had on the singer who is the actual singer of the CNC Music Factory song on his show to sing the Everybody Dance Now. Because she sang, it was supposed to be a demo, and they ended up using her voice and then never paid her. So she went on Arsenio Hall and sang it and like proved to everybody that it was really her voice and not the model they put in the music video.
Damn. All right.
So Arsenio was really doing, he was like a music sleuth, a private eye.
He was kind of the Charlemagne the God before, you know, he paved the way.
Yeah.
So, this, they did a battle and, people could call in on a 900 number to choose their favorites. This is like American Idol. And it raised money for the 1993 Midwest floods.
Oh, Arsenio. But let's, trying to do the right thing.
Let's take a look. I will send you.
Oh, we have the clip?
Tag team's performance first.
Oh, my gosh. So they're both on the show.
Yeah.
This is great. This show is just the coolest of cool at the time.
Oh, huge.
Yep, this is the song I remember. Who's that person that ran across the street? They're gone.
What?
There is another person running across the stage with a mic, and now we haven't seen him again. They sound good. Like, the rapping sounds really good.
Yeah.
Some fun dancers, a DJ up on the scaffolding. Did this song lead to Boom Shakalaka?
Great question.
NBA Jam. The headsets. Rapping with a headset is such like a early 90s MC Hammer kind of thing. Oh, we got signs that say, whoop, there it is, tag team.
I love
just
that.
Hammering it home and it's a tag team song.
I bet you there were, true fans competing against other true fans of the other group.
This is how they settled the lawsuit. So now 95 South, also on Arsenio Hall, the same night?
Same night.
Same night.
Same night, yeah.
So they're all backstage.
Oh, must be going down.
They're all backstage together.
Yeah.
Man, if I could be a fly on a wall with all of them back there. Like, are they, like, just clinking drinks being like, this is ridiculous, or are they mad at each other?
Man, I feel like they're both rolling right now. They're probably clinking glasses.
Same gang vocal, though. Like, it sounds so similar.
I know.
I've never heard this one. I don't think. Or at least I haven't noticed.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with it.
It's so hard to think back, like, what I was hearing when I was 5 or 6. It had to have been tag team, but... You know, you hear this now, and you're like, okay, well, yeah.
The chorus is so similar. Like, the timing is fascinating.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that there hasn't been a documentary about this yet.
We're paving the way.
Yeah, we are. Top comment, I've always preferred this version.
Well, the songs are so similar, but they're not as well. They are very different.
Yeah, the chorus is very similar.
Dead on, yeah.
The rest of it, the timing isn't quite the same. The lyrics are different.
So that's why, like, a little bit of me is, even if Tag Team heard this song and were like, okay, we could do a version better using the same line that's a popular line around town here, it's a different song.
Also, their performance is so different. They're just, like, wearing black sweatsuits. They have a DJ. No dancers, no signs.
Yeah, no booties.
No flashy clothing. It's totally different than Tag Team.
All right, which one do you prefer?
I kind of like this performance because it's like very stripped down and just like we're just rapping over a beat and there's no flash. But the other one is very fun.
Mm-hmm.
The percussion in this one, I got to say, Woot There It Is has cool percussion. There's way more drums.
Yeah.
Like different drum sounds. It's a little faster.
I got a little dance move here like that.
It's hard to say because I'm like, of course, partial to the one I've heard forever, but I'm having a lot of fun in this one. It's pretty cool. And they are commanding with just the three of them.
As I'm getting later into this performance, I might be dialing this number. I might be voting them up.
It's pretty cool.
Well, who do you think the public liked more at the time?
It's way more intense.
Who was dialing in? Who won?
So people dialed in to vote.
Dialed in to vote.
That's how, this is so ridiculous.
I don't know how it works. I guess maybe you like paid 30 cents or whatever to vote. I don't know. And all money went to charity.
Yeah.
Who do you think won?
The phone lines are open. Did they have like the rows of people answering the phones?
They must have, yeah.
Bob Hope was there. I, you know what? Americans love entertainment. They're going tag team. It's dancers. There's more flash. I feel like that's what people go for.
95 South won. Yeah.
What? Really?
Big margin, too.
Wow. I wonder if they ran a campaign. I don't know. I mean, I think it's cool. I mean, we decided that we liked it more. But, it's fascinating.
95 South.
Huh. What a relic from history that I didn't even know about.
I know.
These two acts on Arsenio Hall after the lawsuit.
Well, actually, I don't know.
Oh, before. Well, okay.
Either
after
way.
A dispute. Playing what might be the same song on the show. People are calling in to vote which one is better. Like that. This is like, this will never happen again. This is so special.
Right.
Does Arsenio do like an intro? Where he's like, hey, so everybody, here's how we explain it. Like,
these two
acts have a similar song.
Oh, I think people knew.
Here's why they're performing almost the same song on our show. Call in.
No, at least down south, this was like a big thing. These two songs were out. Like at the time, people knew for sure that they were two different songs.
People in Wisconsin were so confused watching this.
Yeah,
they were
for
like,
sure.
What is happening?
Definitely. So I mentioned that there were a few samples in the 95 South version. Another sample that they used was from a Run DMC song called Peter Piper.
Oh, yeah. Classic.
There it is.
Oh, yeah. There it is.
There it is. So
they say it.
That was sampled in
what?
The 95 South song.
So they sampled Run DMC saying there it is and did like a gang vocal over it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. They didn't need to do that.
Nope. Now, do you want an even crazier one?
Yeah, of course.
Check out.
Bring it on.
Check out this song from 1991. Sexy C, get on girl, go on girl. Check out this. See if you recognize something.
Oh my gosh. What? They say whoop, there it is.
Yeah.
Full on with almost the same beat.
Uh-huh.
What? Whoa. So everyone is wrong.
Everyone's wrong. So I'm definitely a phrase.
This is the OG. This is the original.
This is a song. This is a phrase being used at least 2 years before either of these songs came out.
So no one has any case. And in the way they say it, like, whoop, there it is. It's the same cadence.
Yeah.
It's the same. I feel like it might be in the same key.
Yeah.
That's so bizarre.
I don't know if it's bizarre or if it was such a phrase that was being said that everyone knew it.
Huh.
And thus, no one's got a case here. Coincidence.
No. It's like a folk song.
Yeah.
It really is. I mean, it's no different.
How wild is that, though?
Wow.
Yeah.
Sexy C.
Crazy, right?
The original. Whoop, there it is. Or woot, there it is. Or woof. Or whatever you want to say.
We interrupt this discussion of a weird pop song to tell you about our friends at Dark Matter Coffee in Chicago, Illinois. Dark Matter adheres to a philosophy where quality coffees are sourced based on traceability, innovation, and social responsibility. They've created direct partnerships with farmers that allows them to directly source their beans from the plant to the cup. And we'd like you to try the coffee on us. So head to darkmattercoffee.com, fill up your cart, and enter code WANTEDTOHITCAST. That's all one word, WANTEDTOHITCAST, for free shipping on coffee beans from Dark Matter Coffee. Get freshly roasted.
All right, now we got to watch the videos, obviously.
Okay,
we're watching
the official music
video. Official music video. We're going to start with Tag Team. Womp, there it is.
Okay, so this is the one that I was familiar with. Womp, there it is. Tag Team. Party People. That beginning does pump you up.
Oh, yeah. So jockey.
It really is.
The main part of this was filmed in an airplane hangar in D.C. with over 1,000 extras.
You mean an airplane hangar that they set up a set to look like a diner?
Yep. Exactly right.
That's so ridiculous. It looks like Happy Days.
It does. They have a basketball court in there as well. That's cool.
This is absurd. So great. I also love the Marilyn Monroe white dress.
Yep.
This is so fun. What a great video.
I mean, it's just such a fun song.
It really is. The video is so fun. Feels like the video is like full of pop culture references too.
It might be, yeah. for the time.
I want one of those "Womp There It Is" t-shirts. Actually, the t-shirts have the exact same design as the signs that the dancers were holding up on Arsenio Hall.
All right.
The beach part looks like a Two Live Crew video. Very similar to a lot of their visuals.
Which I'm sure was slightly influenced.
Yeah, or influence. Or just,
I mean, no doubt that both of these groups would have been influenced by Two Live Crew.
Oh, yeah. Also, so many videos came out for this that looked similar. Even that Shaq song, I forget what it was called, when Shaq was a rapper. His yeah. video looks just like this.
Do you recognize anyone famous in the video?
Oh, should I have? Did I miss something?
Go to second 45-ish.
45? Oh, I really
second 45
it.
And tell me if you see anybody you recognize.
On the phone?
Yeah.
Who is it?
Who do you think?
I can't tell who it is.
Well, check out this video.
It's very, very quick.
Yeah.
I noticed that because it's such a... What? No way.
It's not.
No.
It's not. But there is...
It looks just like him.
It does. For all a right. time... There was a rumor that Barack Obama, a young 30-year-old Barack Obama appears.
But, I mean, it wouldn't be that far-fetched. I mean, he's always been a music fan. They had some political music.
Yeah,
he was a community organizer at the time.
He could have organized all those extras to come in.
Oh, my God. Has he confirmed that it's not him?
No.
Even the teeth. I think it's him.
So, yeah, it's been slightly debunked.
Slightly.
Well, I think both the guys and Obama play into it. They haven't commented on it. Because there was one interview where the tag team guys were like, I mean, I don't know. It'd be cool if it was. I have no idea who was there.
We don't know who was there. It's a bunch of extras.
But I don't think it is. It's pretty funny, though.
We need to get Obama on the pod so we can ask him.
I mean, he's a podcaster, right?
He was on WTF with Mark Maron.
We're very similar to Mark Maron as far as audience memories go. So, yeah.
Come on. He records in his garage. Obama came to his garage.
Yeah. I mean, no different than your basement or my living room / dining room. So now let's watch 95 South. Woot. There it is.
Okay. 95 South's. I can't say version of the song. It's a different song.
Yeah.
Love the outfits, the matching outfits.
Love the Mercedes convertible rolling through.
Oh, it's great. I gotta say, this has a better snare drum.
Yeah.
It's deeper. Yeah, this one's, the way it sounds, it's like a little, like, moodier.
Yeah, it feels less poppy.
Yeah, it's a little more, like, brooding a little bit.
Yeah. I also feel like this one is a little bit more on the nose about what the phrase is about.
What the song is about.
Yeah. Which...
Yeah, lyrically, that's true.
Which, you know, this song, I remember being huge, tag team version, I guess, when I was 5 or 6, you heard it everywhere. And I don't think that you would have heard a song that talks about so specifically where the booty at, where the booty at, where the booty at.
Yeah.
On, you know.
Right. I guess it's another reason it would have been bigger. A lot of fraternity letters in this video.
Yeah.
Alpha Phi Alpha.
Because a couple of guys are wearing like Howard shirts in the video. Beginning of the video as well. This one feels a little bit more like Baby Got Back. In a way, they are similar videos.
They definitely have like all the extras. The basketball, which is interesting.
Yeah, you're right.
No diner vibes in this.
Now, that's a random point there.
It's so random. It's so funny.
You know, I bet there's a couple of different groups here that are all dressed similar and dancing. I bet these are fraternity and sorority groups.
Yeah, you're
because
right.
Because I know this is a big thing in fraternity and sororities.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I used to love going out in JMU and seeing those groups.
Oh, it's great.
It's a fun video.
Yeah, it's fun.
Also, a lot of people wearing 95 South shirt.
Yeah, you're right.
So, rocking the merch from both videos.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, awkwardly similar now that I'm...
95 South shirts are cool.
Yeah, they're pretty dope. I'm sure you can find them on those, like, print-on-demand That's
yeah, I'll wear them around town. They'll be like, oh, yeah, you really like the highway that runs through our town? I'm like, no. Fan of the band. Seriously.
I know, man. You're a big infrastructure guy. Big Pete Buttigieg guy.
95 sucks.
95 does.
Yeah. Wow. So, what a ride.
Let's talk charts. Where do you think Woomp peaked?
Tag team. The more household name, at least in my experience, maybe not for other people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say 4.
Okay. Well, Tag Team spent 7 weeks at number 2.
Oh, what couldn't they topple?
A couple different things. They were on the charts and bopping around the top for a while. So I see, Woomp, there it is, hitting number 3 the week of July 10th.
Uh-huh.
Staying there until it goes number 2 on July 31st.
This is 93.
93, yep.
Okay.
Where it spends 5 weeks until going number 3 for 2 weeks, and then going back to number 2 week of September 28th. And uh-huh. I think it stays there for a few weeks. So it's in the top 3 for a good, like, almost 2 months.
Whole summer.
So let me see what's at the top of the list here.
This is a big summer, like, pool song.
Yeah. Before we go through what is on the charts around the same time as these songs, where do you think, woot, there it is, fell. Where do you think it peaked?
Was it around the same dates?
Yeah.
Wow. There had to be different stations playing them. That's what's interesting. They could have been playing both.
It peaked, I will say this, it peaked on August 14th.
What?
So kind of right in the middle of...
Like, there's no way stations were playing both songs at the same time. Like, that would be... But maybe...
I guess that, actually.
That's wild.
Why not?
Well, I don't know. The Arsenio thing might have helped pump that up. When was that? When was the Arsenio thing? I
think that was August 93.
Oh, shit. Man. I know that we talked about them in the same breath. So, 9?
Very close. Peaked at number 11.
Okay.
Never cracked that top 10.
Okay. That I get that.
So let's go back to July 31st.
This is crazy.
The week of July 31st, when we see Tag Team hit number 2 for the first time, we have number 1, the one that keeps it from going up, is Can't Help Falling in Love.
Oh, yeah.
By UB40.
Again.
UB40 kept them down.
UB40 keeps coming up with their little reggae covers.
Yeah.
Of well-known songs, keeping things off the top.
Well, it makes sense because we talked about the Proclaimers here. At number 3, we have Weak by SWV. And this was number 1 when Tag Team was sitting at number 3 for this couple weeks. So that's coming down. We have the Proclaimers at number 4, 500 Miles. We've got Slam by Onyx. That's the Way Love Goes by Janet Jackson. Lately by Jodeci, Show Me Love by Robin S.
Ah,
Knocking the
what
Boots,
a great
H-Town,
chart.
And I'll Never Get Over You by Expose. So that is
what a time where R&B is and hip hop are taking over.
Yeah,
such an interesting chart.
So the last week that Tag Team is number 2 is September 18th, and number 1 at that time is Dream Lover by Mariah Carey.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have UB40 Fallen. You've got If by Janet Jackson at 4, a different song.
I love
it. You also have Right Here by SWV at number 5, a different song.
Wow.
You've got Billy Joel, River of Dreams, going up the charts. And you've got Runaway Train by Soul Asylum falling this week. And you also have Will You Be There by Michael Jackson falling this week. And lastly, you have Lately by Jodeci still on the chart. And you've got Baby I'm Yours by Shay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Pretty great. You've got I Get Around by Tupac come up the chart here.
Yeah. I know that
good
one.
Good times.
Runaway Train is a kind of a lark.
Yeah.
In this chart.
One we've mentioned a couple times now that we have to talk about.
Oh, yeah. I think we need to cover it soon.
Since Tag Team song spent the entire summer at number 2. It's very fitting that it ended up number 2 on Billboard's Hot 100 1993 end of year chart behind Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You.
Which is wild, because think about the songs that were number one.
Yeah.
Didn't get the number two spot on the year long chart.
Yeah. More interestingly than that, Tag Team will land at number 42 for the same song on the same chart the next year.
Whoa.
And for comparison, Whitney does not even land on that chart. So that's
crazy. Whoa, that's interesting.
That this song...
Because that song is...
This song clearly was just a huge song for a year.
Unimpeachable.
The top of the list that year, 94, by the way, was Ace of Base, All for One, and Boyz II Men.
Big year for vocal groups.
Yes. Back to 1993, the year-end chart. Do you know who else was on the year-end chart that year? I will tell you, it's 95 South. There it is. We're talking about two songs here in this episode.
Oh, I know. We've talked about a lot
I
of things.
I thought I was.
This is episode 61.
On okay? a silver
we've,
platter.
We've talked about a lot of shit.
Woot, There It Is comes in at number 44.
Okay.
Behind I Die Without You by PM Dawn.
Vocal
and
group.
In front of Hip Hop Hooray by Naughty by Nature.
Wow.
Big song.
Yeah.
So, by all aspects, Tag Team song is the far more popular, more widely known, sold more copies version. Rob Harvella at The Ringer said of 95.
Love Rob.
He said of 95 South song, it's the rawer, rougher, less wedding friendly version of the two songs. And I think it's right. That's what it comes down to. Like,
yeah,
this song was played everywhere because it could be. It was family friendly. Whereas, even if you think the 95 South song is better in a lot of ways, which I think it is in some ways, it just wouldn't have the same commercial appeal.
It's a little harder to play at youth basketball games.
Yeah,
during warm-ups. Though I'm sure somebody did. They're like, oh, yeah, you want... Whoop, there it is. I'll put it on.
I'm sure that happened.
I got the cassette.
A bunch of parents at bar mitzvahs, horror. So just a couple bits of legacy to the song on the lists, if you will. Atlanta Magazine called the song, the tag team version, the bomb party song of the 90s.
High praise.
Yeah. It lands number 97 on VH1's Top 100 One-Hit Wonders. We've talked about that.
So I guess Tag before. Team is considered a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, well, they are, 100%. Yeah,
okay. I thought they had I think I'm kind of mixing them up with 69 Boys, Quad City DJs, very similar sounds.
It is also currently listed, this list changes in real time. It's currently listed at number 82. On Billboard's Greatest of All Time Hot 100 Songs. And we talked about this recently because number 3 is Smooth. Behind Chubby Checker's The Twist and Blinding Lights by The Weeknd, which is
That's wild.
Yeah.
All of that in a number of ways is strange.
Yeah. I didn't find a lot of meaningful covers, which is fine because there's already a lot of confusion
it's not
here.
Really a cover... ready song.
No, the only one that
Although,
I found
was, who is covering who between these two,
right?
And the only and one Sexy C. What about Sexy C?
Well, covering the exact song, the only one I found that was worth mentioning was a UK band named Clock, and they covered Whoomp, There It Is. It's like a Eurodance track.
Oh wow, good. Does it have a bald white guy rapping?
More of like a dance track. And it's
okay.
Bald white guy dancing.
Oh, they have.
Oh, hair. There's bald guy.
W-H-O-O-M-P-H. Different spelling.
Language barrier.
It's a UK. Oh, this is great. It's just the total Euro dance, like, treatment.
Yeah.
Very like stoic British man rapping the same words as the other one. Great.
Yeah.
Excellent. A lot more synthesizer.
You'll be happy to know that we have a cringeworthy kids corner.
Hey guys, this is the Kids Bop Kids. We're about to dance to one of the best songs of the 90s. Whoop,
I just hate the beginning.
Hey,
like
teachers,
kids intro
join
in the
your
song.
Students and make sure to show them how it's done.
Oh, party, yeah. It's this is very cringeworthy. Yeah. Wow, kids.
This is not good.
This is a kids' corner.
Well, we had to do it. You know?
Yeah.
There's like a whole dance that goes along with it.
I love it, the kids' bop version. They really enunciate. Whoop, there it is. Because the original, whoop, there it is. Like, it's all kind of one word. There it is. But the,
that's
the,
true.
The kids have to be grammatically sound. Whoop, there it is.
That's fair. It's not good. So let's talk about where they are now. And with that, we will also talk about some of the pop culture references because it just flows better that way. We will start with Tag Team. They milked the...
Was there ever any reconciliation or are we getting there?
No, because there was a lawsuit and it was settled out of court. And I think with an out-of-court settlement, part of that is that nobody talks about it. So
okay.
I have no idea.
Okay.
No one talks about it anymore.
That is crazy. They were on the charts at the same time. Like, it's just so ridiculous.
I mean, we'll get into this a little bit. I feel like both found success and because of their versions mm-hmm. of the song. And
yeah, and still continue to get the royalties.
I think in a way that they are both happy with the outcome. This is my opinion and only my opinion. I think that 95 South knows that Tag Team didn't steal their song. And so while they say that they did and they don't make a big of a deal about it, maybe they don't make that big of a deal about it because of the lawsuit. But I also kind of feel like they're like, we got to say something, but we know it was a coincidence.
Yeah.
And that song was just better than our song or more commercially friendly.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
more. So
like, I don't feel like there's a lot success. Of bitterness because they recognize that like, they wrote a more commercially viable song that was had more commercial success than ours.
Right.
And no one's fault. You know?
I'm sure we could find plenty of examples of songs on the charts at the same time that are very similar or the same song covers, etc.
Yeah.
In like the 50s and 60s. This feels so just wild that this was happening at this time. Like,
it's crazy.
Like this hasn't happened in the last 40, 50 years.
I don't know that this could ever happen again.
I don't think it could.
Internet and how quickly songs get out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how quickly are to sue because a song sounds
that too.
Somewhat similar, even though we use the same chords in every fucking song.
Tag Team milk the shit out of the song.
Great.
As they should. They, of course, toured. They played internationally.
I bet their shows were fun as hell.
Yeah. I couldn't find much information about how successful this song was outside of the US, but Steve is quoted talking about London saying, "We played this place called the Hippodrome in London in 1993. I remember when DC yelled, 'Party people,' the hairs in the back of my neck stood up. People were going crazy."
Oh, that's great.
One article I read said, quote, "The song was played in NBA arenas to pump up fans. Mm-hmm. It exploded on the coasts, birthday parties, bar mitzvahs, frat parties, you name it. The song was there." And it was. I mean, mm-hmm. it really was. Let's get into some of the more pop culture hilarities. The Tag Team made a Addams Family version.
Kick it.
I think for like the Addams
right.
Family movie or show.
Good.
Let me send this through.
Probably the movie?
It's awful.
Because the movie came out shortly after.
I think it's a movie, yeah.
Addams Family Womp. Yep, it's a movie. That's Christina Ricci.
Yeah.
Wow, this is amazing.
Is it?
Yeah, rewritten for the soundtrack. Oh, wow. They really tried to shoehorn this, and it does not work.
They must have got paid a lot of money for this.
They couldn't phrase it any differently. It sounds terrible.
Yeah. Well, one shining light is it won a Razzie for worst original song of the year.
Not even original. For a number of reasons.
That's awesome.
Wow. Razzie winners, Tag Team.
almost just as bad, but actually, it's probably a little bit better. They made a version for Disney, which featured Mickey and Donald Duck and crew.
Let's go, guys. Let's go. I love it.
Here's Squeaky Clean Music by Full Effect.
This is better.
It is better
than the Addams Family one.
But I wonder what they used it for. I wonder if it was on, like, Disney Channel. Was that around in 93?
I weirdly remember this.
Do you?
This is so familiar with Donald Duck, like, breakdancing. There it went.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It has played change.
I don't know. This is unlocking some weird part of my childhood that I've seen this before. This is strange. You know how that happens sometimes?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You see some piece of media and you're like,
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the dancing with Donald and Daisy? I don't know. I probably had some, like, VHS that had this on it.
Well, also, they probably pulled some of these clips from other, you know.
This is very familiar to me. I'll probably never figure it out. But
it's a lot better than the Outer Family.
It is better, yeah. Which is saying
they also made a Spanish version. Which,
yes, they did.
Yeah.
They do the whole thing in Spanish. That's great. It works.
The album that the song featured on had the same name, went gold. One article I read talked about the success saying, quote, "Money rolled in, and the two spent it without consideration. For guys who'd grown up in hardworking families, the idea of easily accessible cash made life into a carnival funhouse. Steve got married and started to build a family, but he bought friends with him on international trips and paid for everyone. When he needed $100,000 to put a down payment on a house outside of Atlanta, he called Bellmark, the studio, and waited for the check. Quote, whatever we wanted, we got, Steve said. We didn't think about saving it for later. Shortly after the song's release, DC bought several apartments in Atlanta and a Mercedes. But after this initial success, they attempted to release two more singles, but never generated much success on those. They released a follow-up album entitled Audio Entertainment, but it didn't do shit. In 1997, Bellmark, the record company, filed for bankruptcy after paying a settlement to Kano.
Oh.
For the use of the sample in Womp, There It Is. And outside of that lawsuit, as well as outside of the 95 South lawsuit, for years, there were lawsuits and questions over who actually owned the rights to the song. I think it just finally settled recently.
Wow.
As of a couple of years ago. And Tag Team are now 100% owners of the songwriter royalties to the song. So I didn't dig too much into that whole side of the lawsuit, but there's a lot of weird shit between different labels. And I think that maybe another label tried to buy out Bellmark and thought they had the rights or something or another. So DC returned to DJing at Magic City and other clubs in Atlanta.
Fantastic.
He also got into
Claremont Lounge?
Maybe. Who knows?
He's probably been there.
He's definitely been there. He also got into voice acting, photography, and online marketing.
Cool.
Yeah.
A lot of talents.
Steve bounced around trying to find work in the late 90s after the group essentially disbanded. He did start selling weed at a certain point, small time stuff, but then
we've all been there.
Then got into bigger deals. In that Denver Magazine article, I'll quote them. Steve says he sold some weed, built up trust, and then was hooked up with a dealer to collect and sell 600 pounds of premium marijuana, which would have been worth hundreds of thousands of dollars in the streets. He was reluctant at first, quote, I didn't even want all that shit. But he agreed to have the product delivered to Atlanta. Before the drop was made, though, the police caught the drug runner.
No.
Who was driving a camper filled with pot somewhere in Kansas. Before long, there was a call for Steve. The camper was on a street a few miles from his place. Steve was being set up. He arrived, got the camper, drove home, and took a nap on the couch in his living room. Quote, next thing you know, federal agents were right in my face with guns. Get the fuck on the ground. I woke up to that.
No.
That's what happened with that, man. It was just the worst.
This breaks my heart.
Pretty bummer.
Especially as a guy from Colorado.
I know. So he was convicted, and he spent a few years in jail. But once he got out, he moved back to Denver. And at one point, he started his own label called Merciless Music, and he helps young hip-hop artists navigate the scene.
Cool.
But the story's not over, because it wasn't until the song appeared in the movie Elf that the group started performing.
Oh, it is an Elf. Yeah, it's in the mailroom
they
scene.
Started performing again after this.
After Elf?
This moment.
Oh, yeah. Scene's great. When he's doing, like, the Russian dance.
Yeah.
What, Chuck? I mean, what could be going on down there that's so important? You had to interrupt me. What?
After he drinks the, what he thinks is maple syrup, but is whiskey.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
DC apparently didn't even know the song was in the movie until he saw it in theaters. He said, quote...
So who negotiated that deal?
Oh, yeah. He goes, all of a sudden, the song comes on and I smile because I know a check will be soon coming to my mailbox.
Yeah, it's a fun
song. From there, the song took off a bit and was featured in a few different movies and shows, including Shark Tale, South Park, and Scrubs. Over the years, it's also been featured in Beverly Hills Chihuahua, D2, The Mighty Ducks, Martin, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air,
yeah.
Regular Show, and The Secret Life of American Teenager. In 2010 is when Gawker started the rumor about Obama being in the video. And
did they start it, or is it real?
Is it real? But the attention that they got from that article gave yet another life to the song and resulted in two commercials, one for AT&T, which I couldn't find, and one for Love's Diapers. And the refrain is, poop, there it is. And the idea is that
perfect.
Babies
I think I've seen this.
Drop giant poops in the diapers and it'll stay in there. It sounds like they do a lot of private shows and corporate gigs. And most recently, you might remember the boys being in a Geico commercial that played during the Super Bowl.
This year?
For Scoop, there it is. I think it was last year.
You hundreds on car insurance. Yeah, that sounds familiar.
So what are you waiting for?
Oh, it was
hip-hop
huge.
Group tag team to help you plan dessert?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Scoop, yeah, yep. Yeah, I've seen this. Yep, of course.
Yeah, it was everything.
Yep. So that was actually them.
They're cashing in, baby.
That was actually them. That's cool. Also, that tag team jacket is sick.
That's dope, right? As for 95 South, they put out a second album called One Mo Gen, which featured the song Rodeo that went number 77 in the Billboard 100. So
okay, that's in the Hot 100.
In a way, they...
Probably was higher on the genre charts.
I like this one.
What's that piano line from? It's from...
It's a
disco song.
Yeah. Fun, fun, fun,
fun, fun. Think of what it is. Yeah, I play this on DJ set. This is great.
That's over. 95 South was also featured on a song, Shake It, from Aaron Carter's first album, which we have to listen to.
Wait, he had 95 South on?
Yeah.
And not Tag Team? I gotta give Aaron Carter a little love there. What? This is crazy.
Pretty fun. They also contributed a song to the Bring It On soundtrack.
I don't know. This beat's kind of awesome.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
The song Cheer For Me from the Bring It On soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. Bring It On's great.
Again, couldn't find a lot of information, but it looks like Carlos Daddy Black still performs with his brother Mike as the group 95 South to this day. They have a few tour dates on their website, including the National Cannabis Festival in DC on April 19th. So, Mike, if you want to take a quick trip up to DC, you can see 95 South.
So, our guy from Tag Team went to jail for this shit, and now we're having festivals for it.
Yeah. Carlos is also still styling hair and runs a studio with his wife called Bamboo.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Very cool.
Actually,
everyone, go get your hair cut.
I watched
there.
An interview.
That sounds awesome.
I watched an interview where the interviewer was getting his hair cut, and Carlos was answering questions while cutting hair, which is cool.
That's great.
Yeah, as we've talked about, I feel like both groups are pretty at peace with everything that went down. They all had, you know, some success. So,
I mean, what a story.
To end with some quotes, I don't have much from 95 South, but we'll end with Tag Team. We've talked about them so much. Quote from DC, you get one shot to do shit sometimes. You know what I mean? It's that one shot, and we know we'll never have it again. And he talked a little about the mistakes they made along the way, but overall he said, I wouldn't have it any other way. It's been a good ride. Which, fuck yeah.
Lovely.
And then I'll end with a funny quote from his dad. His dad's great.
Yeah, he seems awesome.
His dad says, he's talking to the interviewer that wrote this article from the Denver magazine. Mm-hmm. And he said, how would you feel if your son made that? And the interviewer says, I can't tell if he's deadpanning or if he's sincere. In any case, it's clear he likes to poke fun at the song. He often refers to it as whoops, almost as if he's saying whoops, as in whoops. My son and his high school buddy made this ridiculous song. But later...
That's so awesome.
Later in the article, he talks about how he and his wife saved every poster and every recording of his son on TV. And says, quote, there's nothing I wouldn't do for those boys. Really, truly, I'm very proud of them and for what they've accomplished.
That's so cute. I love it.
So that's the crazy story.
What a wild tale.
Two incredibly similar songs happening at the same exact time.
And I think we have an idea of what went on, but I think the mystery still kind of lurks. So that's fun.
One big mystery that I have that I couldn't find anywhere is how either of these songs really made it to radio.
Yeah.
And how it's crazy how quickly. Mm-hmm. Let's look at Tag Team.
Maybe you send them out to strip clubs, then the songs blow up.
I mean,
that's happened with a few songs.
Within 2 months. A song from an absolute no-name band group went from getting released to number 2 and staying at number 2 and number 3
all summer. Yeah.
Like, becoming the summer song within weeks.
Yeah.
Wild. And the fact that they have now had multiple commercials, yeah. It's been in multiple shows.
Movies. Huge movies.
They have no other songs, really. I mean...
Yeah.
They even talked about how they play these corporate events, that they play one song. And that's what they get hired to do.
They play one song, crowd cheers, and then they go, Tag Team! Same song again.
Probably. It's crazy.
For either band, being in a time and a place where you're hearing this phrase, and you're like, we gotta make a song.
Whoa.
And then you do it. And this happens. Like just you had to be in that spot at that time for that to happen. And it's just like so cosmic for that to occur. I'm guessing that in the clubs, people would say it in that same cadence. The whoop, there it is. Whoop. Like it has to be, because even the Sexy C song,
yeah,
that's how it is. Or maybe the Sexy C song was playing in these clubs. I don't know.
I mean, that very well could be true.
I think there's a case to be made for that.
Or, yeah, like that song could have been played at a club somewhere.
Yeah.
And it caught on.
Sexy C never brought the lawsuit. Sexy C was like, I don't know. I like that phrase. I'm glad everyone's saying it.
I mean, I guess. I have a fond memory of, I want to say with Lenny Dykstra. It was definitely a Philly that they made a compilation of him missing the ball as an outfielder. Or like, was he shortstop or an outfielder? Or like, the ball kept going through the mitt. And then, whoop, there it is. Whoop, there it is.
Which version was it?
It's a good question.
It feels like a wrinkle in time.
Yeah.
Like a wormhole where these songs, like in alternate dimensions, these songs existed.
Yeah. And in one dimension, a president of the United States of America showed up in the video.
I encourage everyone to check that out. His teeth are exactly the same.
I mean,
I think he's in that video.
You could easily convince me that it is him. If we were talking about a Chicago band, there's no way that I wouldn't
100%. Yeah. Oh, 100%. If we were talking about that, what's that nightclub he used to hang out at in Garfield Park?
Oh, I was thinking of the one from Prince, the Prince nightclub.
Yeah. That one.
Taste. Yeah.
The Taste. If it was filmed there, he's definitely in it.
It might be, though.
That's a wrap on this episode of You Wanted a Hit. Thanks for listening. Good luck getting that song out of your head. If you enjoyed the show, please do all the things podcasts usually ask you to. They really help. Tell a friend about the show, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, write a review on your favorite podcast app, and visit our website, ywahpod.com. That's ywahpod.com for updates on new episodes and our merch store. We have t-shirts, sweatshirts, hats, coffee mugs, stickers, and more, and it all goes back into the podcast. We would love to hear what you thought of the episode, and we also want to hear if there's something that we missed. You can reach us on Instagram and Twitter at ywahpod or directly via email at ywahpod@gmail.com. This podcast was researched, produced, recorded, and edited by me and Theo Beidler, and our theme music is by Air Doctor. We'll see you next time.